Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
This is Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Accusations of first-degree intentional homicide, strangulation, mutilation, dismemberment, and necrophilia.
We bring you raw, unfiltered courtroom audio from the trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The first thing we're going to do here this morning is administer the juror's oath. So I'm going to ask all of you to stand up and raise your right hand.
You and each of you do solemnly swear that you will well and truly try the issue between the plaintiff and the defendant and a true verdict give according to law and the evidence in court, so help you God.
Have a seat. The next thing I want to do, ladies and gentlemen, is briefly explain to you about the process. We have obviously 16 jurors. There's only going to be 12 that are going to be in deliberations. For those of you who aren't familiar with that process, we have a number of alternates. The purpose of an alternate is to ensure that if someone takes ill or can't return or for any reason finds that they can no longer participate in the process, we will continue to have 12, because if we drop below 12, the trial has to end and we need to start over. That's why we have four extra. At the end of the first phase of this trial, the computer will randomly select four of you who are going to be excused and won't participate in the deliberations. That's the purpose of the alternate, and that's the purpose of having 16 instead of 12 right off the bat. I gave you a number of instructions on Friday, and I want to give you one more instruction here this morning to help you better understand the process. In this case, Taylor Shabusiness has entered two pleas to the charges in this case: not guilty and not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. The law requires that the issues raised by the two pleas be decided in a continuous trial that is separated into two phases. Your verdict will be taken at the end of each phase. You are to consider only the issues presented to you during each phase. You are not to consider any issues other than those presented to you for each verdict. In the first phase of the trial, you will be asked to determine whether the defendant is guilty of the charges of first-degree intentional homicide, mutilating a corpse, and third-degree sexual assault. You will make this determination solely upon the facts which deal with the actual incident alleged in the information. During this first phase, you will not be asked to determine whether, at the time of the incident, the defendant was suffering from mental disease or defect. If, after the first phase of the trial, you find the defendant not guilty, the trial will be over. If you find the defendant guilty, the trial will move to a second phase. During the second phase, you will be asked to determine whether the defendant is responsible for criminal conduct. Wisconsin law provides that a person is not responsible for criminal conduct if, at the time it was committed, the person had a mental disease or defect and as a result lacked substantial capacity either to appreciate the wrongfulness of the conduct or to conform the conduct to the requirements of the law. If the trial proceeds into this second phase, you will be instructed more fully as to your duties at that time. We'll now begin the first phase of the trial, and I again caution you that this first phase is concerned solely with the question of whether the defendant committed the crimes of first-degree intentional homicide, mutilating a corpse, and third-degree sexual assault as set forth in the information. The lawyers will now make opening statements. The purpose of an opening statement is to give the lawyers an opportunity to tell you what they expect the evidence will show so that you will better understand the evidence as it is introduced during the trial. I must caution you, however, that the opening statements are not evidence. Having said that, Mr. Saunders, are you prepared to make an opening statement?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Good morning. The evidence in this case will show that in the early morning of February 22nd of 2022, the defendant strangled her friend Shad Therian to death using a dog collar. That after he was dead, engaged in sexual acts with him, his body, subsequently dismembered him using kitchen knives found in the home. Over the next few days, in the first phase of trial, the state of Wisconsin, myself, District Attorney Lassay, will present a number of witnesses who will testify about what happened in this case, and that will show and demonstrate to you that the defendant committed these acts. You'll hear testimony and evidence will show that in the early morning of February 23rd, a Tuesday, kind of a normal cold February in Wisconsin, at a house on Stony Brook Lane. It's sort of, if you know the area, the west side of Green Bay, Fireman's Park, West Mason Street, that area. Tara Packenich is kind of in her home and is awoken by a storm door shutting. There's a door that's sort of abuts the garage, driveway to the residence, normal single-family home in the area. Here's a storm door close and is awoken from sleep. It's early morning, 2:30, 3 a.m., somewhere in there. She goes and gets up. It kind of wakes her up, and she's aware at that point that her son, Shad, was in the basement with a friend, Taylor. They had been over the day before, February 22nd, February 21st, in that time frame. And she kind of goes and sees what's going on, right? We hear this noise late in the night, early in the morning, and she sees the basement light is on. At that point, you know, she's aware that, you know, they were down there throughout the day of the 22nd, and she goes down and sees, because the light's on in the basement, and she's seeing what's going on. And you'll see sort of the scene. You sort of go down the stairs to a normal basement. It's partially finish on one half, partially like a utility area, laundry, that kind of storage area. And right next to the stairs, there's a 5-gallon bucket that you'd get at a home center. And she lifts a towel that's covering the bucket. It's like a beach towel. And unfortunately, sees essentially a mother's worst nightmare, that her son's head is in the bucket. Understandably, you'll hear testimony about that and the shock that that caused. Tara goes and talks to her boyfriend who lives in the home, Steve. You'll hear from him. He goes and checks too, and ultimately they call 911. And that's how this case comes to be. You'll hear from the officers this morning, likely, who arrived on scene and what they observed, obviously confirming the information that was reported to law enforcement about Shad's circumstances, how they find the bucket and it has parts of Shad as well as knives. You'll hear about, at that point, a relative lack of other indicia of a crime occurred. It's not a significant amount of blood on the walls and on the floor. There's some, you'll hear about that, but it takes law enforcement time to see what actually happened, the full extent of what the defendant did in this case. By that point, they're actually interviewing the defendant and she's providing them information, but no, Shad's still in the basement. The rest of him is still in the basement. And ultimately, you'll hear about what officers find in that basement. There's, as I mentioned, the living area has some mattresses, blood-soaked. Once you remove the blankets, other clothing items. There's a tote, a teal tote, kind of a larger Tupperware that has knives as well as body parts of shad. There's bags, a sort of duffel bag type item, a backpack, all of which contain parts of shad's body, as well as knives that were used in the dismemberment. And you'll hear all about that. The officers who responded on scene and processed the evidence, ultimately locating the parts of shad. You'll hear about then other things that are found. Signs of methamphetamine use, which the defendant later acknowledges happened with her and Chad right before this crime occurred. Cleaning products. As I mentioned, you may have an idea in your head of this crime and what that looks like and what law enforcement would encounter when they got there, and you'll see what actually encountered. You'll hear about Clorox wipes and how the defendant would go to the shower and sort of clean up and use a squeegee and clean up the scene. You'll hear about the medical examiner and their team who arrive and are dealing with this situation, and it's determined that not all of shad is located in the basement. There's certain parts that are missing, and ultimately in the van that the defendant is driving, gold minivan, there's additional legs of shad found in that van. You'll hear from Dr. Vincent Tranquita. He's our medical examiner at the time, and he will testify about cause and manner of death. And you'll hear about the cause being strangulation. Significant force applied to the neck, significant signs of strangulation that you'll hear about, and then ultimately, obviously, a significant amount of dismemberment after the fact. You'll hear Dr. Tranquita talk about that. That's all happening at Stony Brook. And 23rd, throughout that day, you'll hear about significant investigation that goes on at that house. And then you'll hear about then, a few hours after that initial 911 call, how law enforcement kind of gets word that, you know, Shad was with the defendant, Ms. Shabusiness, before this offense, and that they locate her at her apartment on Eastman Avenue, sort of on the other side of Green Bay, east side. Encountered as she's leaving the apartment that she shares with another person. And you'll see that encounter, how the defendant is essentially literally caught red-handed, blood on her hands. There's a significant knife wound that she talks about later was suffered in the course of the crimes. There's blood on her clothing. There's black sweatshirt, black sweatpants. And she talks with law enforcement for a pretty significant amount of time. Detective David Graff, who's seated at counsel table here, interviews the defendant along with another detective, and they start to learn more about what happened in this case and sort of the hours leading up to the crimes. Again, it's a significant and lengthy interview, and the defendant's providing information that you'll see jives with what law enforcement's encountering in that basement. She admits to, as I mentioned, methamphetamine use before this. She and Shad were sort of hanging out beforehand. They were friends from school back in the day, and it seems like they were in a friendly state at the time of this offense. And you'll hear then they go to the Stony Brook Lane home and go to the basement. They're let in by Steve. You'll hear about that in the early morning of the 22nd. You'll hear the defendant describe that what apparently begins as a somewhat sexual encounter escalates to a dog collar being placed around Shad's neck. And the defendant quite vividly describes what she then did. She's yanking on the chain. She's describing what's happening to Shad. It's evidence that you'll hear, and you'll hear it from the defendant's own mouth, that shows that this is an intentional act. It's not one pull of a gun trigger. It's an intense act. You'll hear about that from Vincent Tranquita, Dr. Tranquita as well. She's pulling harder, just hoping that he eventually passes, and it takes a significant amount of time. It takes several minutes, as you'll hear her say. After that, after Shad's deceased, she describes what she then does with his body, again, engaging in sexual acts, ultimately dismembering him quite significantly. She reports that afterwards, that law enforcement would have fun finding all the body parts that are located throughout the basement, told law enforcement where to find certain body parts. Like I said, it wasn't obvious to law enforcement who initially responded to that basement what happened. It's information being provided by the defendant that later is corroborated by law enforcement. You'll hear the defendant admit to cleaning up, avoiding guilt, avoiding responsibility for this. You'll hear her talk about that. You'll see the signs of that, as I mentioned earlier. That dismemberment process takes that entire day of the 22nd, essentially. As I mentioned, Tara wakes up to Taylor leaving at about 2:33 a.m. on the 23rd. The investigation doesn't stop there, despite the defendant's confessions. Law enforcement continues. They send DNA to the lab, and it confirms the accounts that we're getting here. Blood on the defendant's hands, left and right hands, or Shad's. Blood on the knives, some of the knives that are used is Shad's. The clothing item, as I mentioned, the black sweatshirt, black sweatpants, has red substances, blood on the sweatpants. All consistent with what happened, with the defendant's statements, with what law enforcement's seeing. So this case is really not a whodunit. You'll hear about the crimes that clearly occurred. You'll hear the defendant's statement saying, yep, I did it. And you have DNA evidence and other investigative tools that kind of corroborate everything else. So for this, the defendant's charged with the three crimes that the judge read off earlier. First-degree intentional homicide, mutilating a corpse, or dismembering the corpse, and then third-degree sexual assault. So we'll get into what that all means later. We'll have closing arguments where we kind of provide summation and provide all that to you. But for now, as you kind of listen to the evidence, count one, the state needs to prove that the defendant caused the death of Shad and that she did so intentionally. As I mentioned, you're going to hear a lot about that, and it's nothing but intentional. This is not an accident. This is not a mistake. It's a significant act the defendant did. Dismembering a corpse for the purpose of concealing a crime, you'll hear a lot about that. And third-degree sexual assault, how she engaged in oral contact with Shad's body and inserted objects in his body as well after the fact. I know in voir dire some of you talked about, you've heard some about this case, and that's to be expected, potentially. It's really important to stress that our system of justice is not based on media accounts, on word of mouth, on what you hear. The evidence is what happens in these four walls, and what you hear and see. And ultimately, the evidence in this case will point to one area. The defendant is guilty of these three crimes. So again, this is just meant to be an overview on the evidence we expect you to hear over the next few days in the first phase. But ultimately, the case comes down to choices and responsibility. The defendant made a series of choices, February 21st, 22nd, and 23rd. Choices to use methamphetamine. Choices to kill her friend, Shad. Choices to then utterly degrade him after the fact. The choices the defendant made. And when we come back in closing arguments later this week at some point, we'll argue to you that the evidence in this case is clear. The choices the defendant made indicate that you're not going to have a reasonable doubt about what the defendant did, that she's guilty of all three crimes. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Freeland, are you ready to make an opening statement?
Yes, I am, Your Honor. Thank you very much. Your Honor, may it please the court, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, Mr. Lassay, Mr. Saunders. Thank you for your service as jurors. We definitely appreciate you being here serving on the jury, because a jury is an integral part of the court process. Without you jurors, our court system simply couldn't function. The lawyers couldn't do their job, and the court couldn't do its job. So we appreciate your time, your attention to detail, and your anticipated focus over the next several days that you're going to put into this very serious case. Now, in this case, the state of Wisconsin, through the Brown County District Attorney's Office, has the complete burden of proof. The state must prove to all of you jurors, beyond a reasonable doubt, each and every element of the crimes charged beyond a reasonable doubt. The United States Constitution presumes that every person who is accused of a crime is presumed to be innocent. And in this case, Taylor Shabizis is presumed to be innocent. She doesn't have to prove anything. The defense does not have to prove anything in this case. Why? Because the complete burden of proof rests with the District Attorney's Office, with the state of Wisconsin. They have to prove up all the facts. And in this case, you're going to hear a lot of different facts. You're going to hear a lot of different accounts from witnesses, citizen witnesses, detectives, police officers, experts, DNA analysts, medical examiners, all of that. You're going to have to take all of that information into consideration when you deliberate. But the entire burden rests with the state in this case. My client, Taylor Denise Shabizis, also has an absolute right to remain silent. Under the law, she has a right not to testify if she so chooses, and if she elects not to testify, you cannot use that fact alone against her in this trial. She doesn't have to testify, but she may testify. In this particular case, ladies and gentlemen, Taylor Denise Shabizis was friends with Shad. They went to high school together. They went to school at Bayport, and they had classes together. And they were, when they were younger, they dated for a short period of time. But basically, they were friends. You're going to hear some testimony on, it was a Wednesday, February 23rd of 2022. You're going to hear, I believe, a 911 tape. You're going to hear testimony from Tara Pakinich and Stephen Hendricks. They live at 829 Stony Brook Lane in Green Bay. There was a call from Mr. Hendricks that he apparently went downstairs in the basement and saw a bucket, saw a human head in the bucket, and he had checked it out because his significant other, Tara Pakinich, had initially went down there and saw this and had him go check. He didn't have glasses on, but he apparently called 911, and that caused the officers to come to the scene at 829 Stony Brook Lane. And there'll be some testimony about this residence. It's a small, quaint home. It's got a loft upstairs where I believe Tara Pakinich and Stephen Hendricks were sleeping. Then it has a floor level with kitchen, living area, and then it has a basement. And there will be testimony. We believe that Stephen Hendricks last saw Shad at the house on Monday night, which I believe would have been February 21st of 2022. He will indicate that both of them will indicate that they really did not see Taylor Shabizis leave. They heard a vehicle start, a door slam, caused them to wake up. Officer Wanish, you'll hear from him. He came to the house and went down the basement to make some observations. That the officers did a protective sweep. They walked around the basement and the entire house to see if there were any other people there on February 23rd, 2022. And the only people that were there were Tara Pakinich, the owner, Stephen Hendricks, and the daughter, Ava Wheelock. Those people were there. No Taylor Shabizis was there. She wasn't in the basement. She wasn't anywhere in the house. But obviously there was some investigation, and evidence was apparently found. And it's true that law enforcement officers didn't have a clear picture or a clear understanding of what was really happening or what happened. And so they're trying to figure things out as they went along. There would be some testimony from other officers with regards to the other scene, which is 2353 Eastman Avenue in Green Bay. that I submit was Taylor Shabizz's apartment, and she lived there with Scott Tholms, T-H-O-M-S. And law enforcement officers came over there, and my client came out of the apartment complex, and she was arrested. She had a warrant. She was taken into a squad car and taken down to the Green Bay Police Department for questioning by Detective Groff and Detective Kevin Kempf. Also, law enforcement arrested the other person in apartment one, that was Taylor's apartment, Scott Tholms, and he was ordered to lay on the ground, and he was taken into custody as well. You'll hear from lots of different officers, in this case law enforcement officers. The officers found a gold Chrysler Town and Country minivan, I believe 2006, and they found it parked in the Eastman Avenue parking lot, and there were some concerns about it. Now, this vehicle is owned by Scott Tholms, and I believe that will come out that he was the one that owned that vehicle. But inside that vehicle, there was a crockpot box, and there were some human body parts in there. In this particular case, you'll also hear from Dr. Tranchita. He's the medical examiner, did a lot of investigative work looking at cause and manner of death of the deceased. So you'll hear about all of his findings. You're also going to hear from Kevin Scott. He's the DNA analyst for the State of Wisconsin Crime Lab. And his testimony, I believe, will show that he took various swabs as part of the DNA analysis, and items were swabbed. There were sweatpants, there were blades, there were light switch, there was boxes, hands, people's mouths, and a dildo, because that was found. The swab of the dildo, he will testify, I believe, that the possible contribution of DNA from Shad Therian as it relates to the dildo is inconclusive due to the complexity of the mixture. So the state is going to argue that there was a sexual assault by use of the dildo, and the deceased DNA is not on it. So that's something you'll have to take into consideration. You're going to hear from Sergeant Kurt Brester from the Green Bay Police Department. He was dispatched to 829 Stony Brook Lane regarding a suspicious situation on February 23rd, 2022. And that he conferred with Officer Wanish outside, that he had contact with Tara Pakinich and Stephen Hendricks, and that he did a protective sweep of the residence, and they didn't find anybody else other than Ava Wheelock, who was the young lady, she's 16, sleeping in a bedroom. You're going to hear from, I believe, Officer T.J. Buckman, he arrived on the scene as a supervisor to this apartment complex. And he actually went to 2353 Eastman Avenue in Green Bay, and he saw that gold van parked outside, and he had several other officers keep the van under surveillance. And at least from his initial investigation, he did not have enough information to determine whether or not Taylor Shabizz was the suspect or the victim. And so those are some other things that you're going to have to take a look at and think about. You're going to see the videotape in this case, where there was a lengthy video down at the Green Bay Police Department between Detective Groff and Detective Kempf and my client, Taylor Denise Shabizz. And they talked, and Detective Groff asked her lots of questions about what she knew and her whereabouts and what may or may not have happened. So you have to pay close attention to that and think about the things that are said. In a case like this, and really in any case, you have to assess the credibility of each and every witness. You have to take all of that into consideration in this matter. I'd ask that you, when you're considering all of the evidence, don't jump to conclusions. Don't rush to judgment. Please keep an open mind. Listen to all the facts. Listen to what every witness has to say carefully and weigh what they have to say. And remember, there's always two sides to every story. You jurors are going to have to decipher the facts of what what may have occurred or what didn't occur. But at the end of the case, we ask that you find our client not guilty on all the counts. Thank you.
And then, Mr. Saunders, are you ready to call your first witness?
Yes.
Your Honor, may we have just a very brief sidebar before the first witness?
Sure.
Your Honor, the state calls Amy Shannon.
Amy Shannon.
Before we go on, it wouldn't be a jury trial if we didn't have technical problems. So there's going to be an audio play shortly, and we're having a hard time getting the audio on. So we're just taking a minute to see if we can. If we can't get it done quickly, I'm going to excuse the jury and call somebody out who can do it.
That's good.
My name's Ms.
loading again, so it's rebooting. I'm not sure exactly how long that's going to take, but
okay. Does the court wish that I make the sort of foundational questions that are relatively brief?
Sure. Why don't we do that? That will give us some more time. So go ahead, Mr. Mazzei.
Thank you. Ms. Shannon, can you state for the record how you are employed?
I'm the Assistant Director for Brown County Public Safety Communications. That's the 911 Dispatch Center.
Can you just explain for the jury how the 911 Dispatch Center works in Brown County and how it relates to the other law enforcement agencies?
So the 911 center takes the calls for all law enforcement, ambulance services, and fire departments within Brown County. As part of that, all calls and radio traffic that come in through our center are recorded, and then they are held in our center as evidence for 120 days. As we're requested by agencies, we release that evidence back to them because it's technically their evidence. We're just the holders of that evidence.
And if a law enforcement agency makes a request that you retain a particular call or record, is that something that your agency does?
We do.
And are those calls, are they something that are easily discernible by the date and the location of the call?
Yes.
Does the system actually store the location of a phone call that comes in?
It depends on how it comes in, but yes.
And essentially, are you able to serve as a record keeper or records custodian for the 911 center, given your current role?
That is my part of my role, is to be the records custodian.
And how long have you worked with the 911 center overall?
Overall, over 10 years.
And were you asked by the Green Bay Police Department to record and maintain a call from February 22nd, actually February 23rd, 2022, I believe, at 3:24 a.m.?
Yes.
And as part of your work with the 911 center, did you have an opportunity to review a recorded phone call that came in on February 23rd at 3:24 a.m. from a residence located at 829 Stony Brook Lane?
Yes.
You had a chance to listen to that entire call?
I did.
And if we played that phone call for you, would you be able to identify that call?
Yes.
You're listening to True Crime Today in the Hidden Killers podcast, continuous coverage of the trial of Taylor Shabusiness, Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage.
More raw trial audio next.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on Spin Quest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here. And you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like live dealer blackjack and craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com, get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.